Stand, please.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before this honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-3013, United America vs. Juan Daniel Del Cid Morales, also
Morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor, and good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Manuel Rechoreta. I represent Mr. Juan Del Cid Morales. We are here. We have raised numerous issues regarding his trial. One issue that I would like to begin with deals with the chain of custody issue that was dealt with by a panel of this court in the case of United States versus Mejia. It deals with El Salvadoran authorities arresting and retrieving documents from co-defendants in this case. The problem that we are presented with is that a DEA special agent testified in our case about a 1 hour and a half time lapse.
If we agree with you on that, I agree that's a problem. Time element here is a problem. We'll hear from the government on that. But would it have made it a difference here? I think had a confession from your client.
Well, I think it
in
would.
In the face of that, don't we have a harmless error problem here?
I think
If it is error at all.
I think it would, because we're dealing with the material that was collected by the El Salvadoran authorities and then presented to the special agent. And that material was ID documentation, but also included something which I think was very prejudicial for a fact finder listening to this case, and that was a list of DEA agents in Guatemala, which is extraordinary.
Judge Griffith's question is, why isn't, if the confession is properly admissible, why isn't that harmless?
Well, of course we challenge the
confession.
The confession, but the significance of that document tied in with the issues we've raised concerning variance and our multiple instruction issue, we think that they all come together, because as the case was presented, as the government presented this case, we had initial meetings in early 2006 between a number of co-defendants. We had a subsequent meeting in June of 2006. We had another meeting in July of 2006. So we have identified what we believe are different conspiracies that were presented to the fact.
Wasn't the goal of all those meetings the same, and that's to get cocaine through Guatemala to the United States? No question the details are different, but wasn't the overarching purpose of all of those meetings to transport the cocaine through Guatemala to the United States?
For co-defendant Bardales, yes. For co-defendant Serrano, yes. For co-defendant Brand, yes. But for my client,
there was some other goal of these meetings besides getting cocaine through Guatemala to the United States. What was it? Is it a social gathering?
For my client, his presentation there, certainly at the tail end of these meetings, was that goal. But the parameters of what was happening, how things were going to be taking place, was certainly very distinct from that initial April 2006.
But the objective was the same. The you're saying the strategy for how to execute may have varied from meeting to meeting, but the overall objective for all the meetings was the same. In that it was to get cocaine through Guatemala to the United States.
Yes. Okay. But the problem we're having is that we're expanding that universe. And in the expansion of that universe, we do need to draw a line between what was happening in April of 2006 with completely different individuals and what took place with my client.
Tactics change in the nature
of any enterprise. Well, tactics changed, and also actors changed. Because if we're just relying on tactics, then we can begin to collect a lot of people sitting in El Salvador, Guatemala, tracing back to Colombia and saying everybody's in the same business here. But it's like saying that we've got the CEO of Exxon over here and we've got the CEO of BP over here. Everybody's in the business of pulling the oil out, but they're different actors doing different things at different places for different reasons. And that's where my client steps in. My client steps in at that tail end and is thrust into what is happening here.
But it's not out of the question that he joined an ongoing conspiracy, even if he came later in the day than some others, is it? I mean, that doesn't make it a new conspiracy each time a new actor is added on, does it?
Well, certainly the fact finder found that.
Yeah.
We would argue against that. We would like the opportunity to present the case again to another fact finder with some of the rulings that we would like, but
I want to take you back to the chain of custody just a minute. A break in a chain of custody does not inherently render evidence inadmissible, does it?
Certainly not.
I mean, evidence comes in all the time that doesn't have a pristine chain, doesn't it?
Indeed.
So what is the error here, as you see it, in allowing this evidence in?
The problem is that it begins. This break is not like a break within a chain. This is the first few links of this. And the concern that we have is Special Agent Fraga, DEA agent that handled and received that information, cannot even today tell the court, tell a new fact finder, what happened when those El Salvadoran authorities picked up the co-defendants. We do not know which wallet was picked up.
Wouldn't that all go to the weight of the evidence rather than the admissibility?
Certainly. And the case law talks about...
Then, what is the reversible error in the judge's admission of that evidence?
Well, we certainly are beginning to move away from a simple weight analysis and into a problem area, I would argue, where we have gone from 10 minutes, where the opinion in Mejia has identified a break, 10 minutes being just too short of a time. And we certainly cannot come to the court and say, hey, guess what? El Salvadoran authorities are known for immediately whipping out DEA agent lists to stick into co-defendant pockets, and so they can show, aha, these are the guys. We cannot tell the court that. But we are moving so far away from a reliability analysis when we go from 10 minutes to an hour and a half, when we go from Northeast D.C. to San Salvador, El Salvador, when we go from the MPD, who we know their techniques, we know their procedures, to a law enforcement agency that we have no idea what their policies, procedures, practices are.
I want to take it, just if you can put it in one sentence for me, what is the error that the judge committed by letting this evidence in? Are you saying he should not have let it in at all?
He should not have let it in at all because the chain of custody.
Once this evidence was found by the Salvadorans in the absence of Americans, no matter how credible, no matter how convincing, no matter how condemning, that evidence could never be used because it was not found by the police.
It certainly
by Americans.
It certainly could be used.
Right?
It could be used
at
by.
At what point then did it become inadmissible?
It became inadmissible when there was not a witness, a fact witness.
No. All right. That's where we started here.
Right.
It was found by the Salvadorans. There were no Americans present. Nobody who's testifying in the trial was present. That renders it inherently inadmissible from then on. Is that correct?
No. That goes to the weight analysis. But then the weight also goes to how that evidence is going to be brought in. And ideally, and how it is normally done is, Colonel somebody from the El Salvadoran police walks in and says, guess what? I was the guy that picked it up.
Certainly would be better.
Certainly.
Certainly would be better. But you're saying that because the colonel's not there, it's inherently inadmissible. I'm just trying to understand
Indeed.
Your argument.
Indeed. It is inadmissible. There's an authenticity issue component to this. And I see my time is up.
Well, I just have a quick question.
Whites only control you. They don't control us.
I appreciate that.
Were you finished?
I'll take the court.
Were you finished? Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to go back to, again, to Judge Griffith's question about the confession and ask you about two arguments the government makes in its brief, which I don't think you responded to. In response to your argument that the defendant here, and I'm talking about the confession, okay, was just a, quote, ignorant pig farmer, the district court made a finding. The government points this out. The district court said, based on the defendant's calm and composed testimony, he found that this former police officer was, quote, entirely the opposite of the poor pig farmer he seeks to portray himself of. That sounds like a finding that resolves this issue, right?
Indeed, Your Honor. I think the thrust of our argument was the manner of the interrogation, the flight from a foreign country, the number of hours that were spent during that transport.
I thought you... So that brings me to my second question. In the brief, the government's brief, they cite a case called U.S. versus Yunus, D.C. Circuit decision.
The first of the Fawaz Yunus series.
Right. Well, and their argument is that they found a knowing waiver in a situation where the interrogation was, you know, I mean, if anything, far more questionable than this one, and we found a knowing waiver. So how do you distinguish that case from this one?
Your Honor, I'm afraid I don't have the Yunus decision at the forefront in my mind.
That's the one where they broke both his wrists on international waters shortly before he confessed.
With each one of these cases where people are being extradited, the components to how that extradition takes place and the length.
They fooled Fawaz Yunus into thinking he had a drug deal going down, and they drew him into international waters and then tackled him on the deck of the boat. So.
Yeah. How can I don't know that I can distinguish that, Your Honor. We would rely again on that the time frame, how it was the takedown took place. But I don't know that I can distinguish that for the court.
We'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal.
I thank the court.
Thank you, counsel. Here from the United States.
May it please the court. I'm Stephen Aistrager for the United States. Just to follow up on Chief Judge Santel's questioning about whether this goes to weight or admissibility on the chain of custody, we think this court has, in Mejia, in footnote 4, this court cites Melendez-Diaz, and I think that this court has, since the 40s and 50s cases where it used to be almost per se inadmissible where there was a break in the chain of custody, now it goes more to weight. And I think in this case, it's telling, I think, that the arguments that counsel just made were not presented to the jury during closing argument. And if it were an important issue to present to the jury about weight, you would have expected that.
In the Mejia case, how long was the break in the chain of custody? Remind me.
It was 10 minutes.
And how long was it here?
It was, Agent Fraga remembered in this case that it was an hour to an hour.
And Mejia, wasn't that significant? Didn't the court find it significant that it was such a short period of time? Not much mischief could possibly happen in 10 minutes?
It was indeed, and I think an hour and a half certainly agitates in Mr. Morales' favor versus Mejia, but I think that an hour and a half still is not very long when you look at the nature of the evidence. It's hard to imagine that the Salvadoran police...
Your opposing counsel relies upon, says there's a great deal of significance to the list of DEA agents. That would be easily put into someone's...
I'm not sure about that, because I think it would be...
How long does that take to put in someone's wallet?
It takes a while to figure out who the Guatemalan DEA agents are. And
that's done beforehand, and then you slip it in that 90 minutes, right?
Right.
I mean, we're not saying that in the 90 minutes he has to learn who the DEA agents are and then put it in. I'm just saying physically to put it in, that would be very...
It's possible. I think we can't rule it out. And it's something that, again, I think it's an argument that could have been made to the jury that was not made to the jury. But I don't think it makes it per se inadmissible. And in any event, as Your Honor's question...
You want to rely on harmless error there?
I think absolutely. And I think that's the easier way.
Not confessing error, are you?
No, absolutely not. But I do think that this case is much more easily resolved by saying, in Mejia, this court found that precise piece of evidence was harmless error. I think that particular analysis doesn't change. The time difference in this case versus that case, the harmless error analysis is exactly the same. There was a confession in Mejia, much like Morales' confession here. And I think that the other than the challenge to the confession in this case, I think everything else goes to small peripheral pieces of evidence that couldn't possibly have affected the jury's verdict. Those identification cards went to something that the government and Mr. Morales stipulated to, which was that Braun was a government Guatemalan agent at one point, that Mejia was a Guatemalan police officer at one point. So those, and I think you'll find that at page 542 of the joint appendix, that's where the stipulation is. The DEA list, that as well, for reasons cited to Mejia, that was harmless error, if error at all, because we know from the July meeting, for example, that Morales and his friends were interested in what anti-narcotics agencies were up to. Morales specifically mentioned the DEA at the July meeting. So for those reasons, we think it's the easiest way for this court to go would be to say, if error at all, harmless error, see Mejia at page 1338. Turning to the 1337 to 1338. As to the confession, I think Judge Tatel's question about Eunice, I think Eunice easily resolves this case. I think you could just say, see Eunice. That's what that part of the opinion would look like. I don't know that there's any distinguishing fact between this case and Eunice that would work in Morales' favor. And I do think, as Judge Tatel indicated, that the district court's order, I mean, these were almost all matters of credibility. You had Sandoval's testimony on the one hand, and you had Morales' testimony on the other, and the district court credited Sandoval. And I don't think there's much for this court to do in terms of going back and second-guessing that, and that's what Eunice makes clear, that this court generally won't invade credibility determinations. If there were any other questions about any of the other issues, I would simply just rest on our brief.
Well, seeing none, thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Counsel, your time was expired. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. Thank you. I just wanted to mention, regarding the documents that were picked up, there were identification documents, the DEA agent documents, but there was a gun permit document that was tied to my client. Well, a gun permit document, no big deal. The problem was that the government then introduced an expert to come into the court and say, hey, guess what? Guns equals drugs. So it was not a small document. It was something that the government used to their advantage to show that this individual played around with drugs, played around with guns, and therefore the drugs that we're telling you about, they come together. And if I just to conclude, part of my concern with what's happening with the time frame here is I was not trial counsel, but my primary work is trial work. And when we have this kind of a situation, we're looking for a little bit of guidance. If we have an opinion, and the government has an opinion, that Mr. Oestreicher has cited the page number for, but if we have that type of an opinion at the trial level, we are now having to deal with, wait a minute, in this chain of custody issue, and in these style of cases where we are relying upon foreign law enforcement, What do we rely our analysis on? Are we going to feel good about the fact that maybe Guatemalan law enforcement decided to pick somebody up, move them around, gather some information, and then just present it all to the DEA, the FBI, anyone else? And do we know that the court will automatically allow that in because of a decision like this? Do we have a basis to fight that? Do we have a basis on authentication, on chain of custody? So the 10 minute, we can kind of get a grasp of. 10 minutes, sure. They picked them up at that restaurant. They moved them to the airport. They've handed them over. Sure, 10 minutes. When we're getting to an hour and a half, we're getting into a world where we may have a lot of questions popping up, and I certainly would think that the trial court judge would have that. I appreciate the court's time.
Thank you, Councilman Ritterita.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you for accepting the appointment. You were appointed to represent the client, and you've given it everything it's got, and I thank you very much on behalf of the courts and the United States.
I appreciate the kind words.
Case is submitted.